to see if there's a door.
Okay, we're going to be speaking from this end, so you might want to turn your chairs around if you feel more comfortable. Let me introduce our speaker this morning. It's wonderful to have Reverend Richard Coombs with us. Richard, tell us something about yourself. How many years have you been in Burford now?
Been in Burford for over 18 years, about 18 and a half years.
Long time there. Before that, you were in London, I think?
In London, yep.
Okay, you were a curate in London?
I was a curate, first of all, in an area of North London called Cockfosters. I was there for 4 years. In between Barnes and Enfield, if you know that part of London.
The end of Piccadilly Line.
End of the Piccadilly Line, absolutely. That's how most people know it. And then I was for 4 years in the City of London at a church called St Helens Bishopsgate, right in the middle of the financial centre. But we lived just south of London Bridge in the borough.
Okay, so the biggest change moving from St Helens Bishopsgate to Burford?
Yes, that was a big change.
Big change.
But I'd grown up in Buckinghamshire, so coming to this part of the world felt far more like home than London ever did.
Okay. All right, let's go back to the early days. Were you coming from a Christian background, or did you come
from a church-going family who were, I think as I look back, far more responsible for my conversion than I gave them credit for at the time. So they took me to church, they read the Bible to me, but we weren't a very lively church, to be honest, when I was growing up. So it wasn't until I got to my school Christian Union that I really heard, I suppose, the truth about Christianity for the first time.
What age would you be then?
14.
14? Yeah. So your ministry now in Burford?
Yeah.
Growing church?
Yes. It was fairly small and moribund and elderly when we started.
Yeah.
But yes, it's for the last 18 or 19 years, it's been growing steadily. Yeah.
What would you say are your priorities in ministry?
Oh, gosh.
Well, are you one or two priorities?
Early on a Saturday morning for that. Now, my priorities, yeah. I mean, it's changed a bit as time has gone on. Now, number one, prayer. So praying for my family and the church family.
Yeah.
Number two, preparation, particularly preparing for sermons and teaching and various sorts. And then thirdly, and this is what's changed, my priority now is pastoring the church staff. So we've now got a staff of about 12 people.
Okay.
And I've realised that my priority is them rather than everybody else in the parishes.
Very good. Now, do you all have a piece of paper which looks like this? It should be a Bible passage from Luke's Gospel, chapter 16. I know Richard's going to be saying a few words from that. So do you all have a piece of paper in front of you? Yeah? Now, just one final thing. According to your website, it says, he is most at home walking his dog around his Cotswold parishes. Is that true?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, what sort of dog do you have?
I have a black Labrador, I'm afraid. It's a bit of a
classic Cotswold.
She is lovely, though.
Okay, final question. This is our first men's breakfast. Have you seen a lot of different events for men in Burford? Have you seen the benefit of that?
Oh, over the years, very much so, yes. We had a men's breakfast like this at the Cotswold Wildlife Park, which everybody thought was a bit of a joke. A good place for the men. So we did that for many years because a member of our congregation is the farm manager for the area around the wildlife park. That then slightly fizzled out. I'm not quite sure why. I mean, the church events have this sort of life cycle, don't they? So we stopped about 5 years ago, but we've started again in our new church hall. We've just renovated our church hall. And the men themselves are doing the cooking. So we've got about four men who love cooking breakfast. So they do that, and actually we've got a men's breakfast this morning, which I'm not at, obviously. So,
thank you for being here.
So we've just started that monthly. We have one men's Bible study group, and we have done a number of men's weekends away. Not with huge numbers, normally about sort of 15 or 20.
Can you put your finger on why getting just men together is quite a helpful thing, rather than just a mixed group? Is there a helpful thing getting just men?
I think, well, if I speak for myself, When I'm in a mixed group, I think women are much better at talking than men.
That's fair to say.
So men. I think men in mixed groups tend to defer to their wives and their partners. I think men talk much better and probably a bit more honestly when they're with other men.
We should look forward to having conversations after.
Just a correction, Andrew. It's not our first men's breakfast in Lechstadt. It's the first for three or four years. We have had them before down at the Trout.
Great,
it's not
yeah.
new, but it is being reinvigorated.
Reinvigorated men's breakfast.
Grateful
I like that
for
idea.
We're not grateful.
Thank you. Richard, talk to you.
Right, thank you. Would somebody like to read this for us? Because I'm not sleeping all the time. Anybody feel brave enough to read this story to us? Yeah? Thank you, Dave. Dave, isn't it?
Jesus told his disciples, there was a rich man whose manager was accused of wasting his possessions. So he called him in and asked him, "What is this I hear about you? Give an account of your management, because you cannot be manager any longer." The manager said to himself, "What shall I do now? My master is taking away my job. I am not strong enough to be, and I am ashamed to beg. I know what I'll do, so that when I lose my job here, people will welcome me to their houses." So he called in each one of his master's debtors. He asked the first, "How much do you owe my master?" 3,000 litres of olive oil," he replied. The manager told him, "Take your bill, sit down quickly and make it 1,500. Then he asked the second, "How much do you owe?" 30 tons of wheat," he replied. He told him, "Take your bill and make it 24. The master commended the dishonest manager because he had acted shrewdly. "For the people of this world are more shrewd in dealing with their own kind than are the people of the light. I tell you, use worldly wealth to gain friends for yourselves, so that when it is gone, you will be welcomed into eternal dwellings. Whoever can be trusted with very little can also be trusted with much. Whoever is dishonest with very little will also be dishonest with much. So if you have not been trustworthy in handling worldly wealth, who will trust you with true riches? And if you have not been trustworthy with someone else's property, who will give you property of your own? No one can serve two masters. Either you will hate the one and love the other, or you will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money." The Pharisees, who loved money, heard all this and were sneering at Jesus. He said to them, "You are the ones who justify yourselves in the eyes of others, but God knows your heart. What people value highly is detestable in God's sight."
Thanks very much. Can you hear me if I speak about this volume? I wonder how many of you know the film The Shawshank Redemption. A number of people know that.
Yeah.
In case you haven't seen it, let me just remind you of the story, because it is a great film. It's on about every 2 weeks or so for some reason. So if you haven't seen it, I do recommend you watch it when it's next on. It's the story of a banker called Andy. And Andy is incarcerated in Shawshank State Penitentiary for the murder of his wife and her lover, despite his protestations of innocence. And Andy soon becomes friendly with Red. And Red is the prison fixer, and he's able to get hold of anything. First of all, Red acquires a little rock hammer for Andy, because Andy enjoys carving stone chessmen. So he gets him the little hammer. And because Andy was a banker, the prison governor also becomes friendly with him. And he begins to use him in a personal money laundering operation. One day, Andy tells Red that if he's ever freed, Andy has buried a package under an oak tree in Maine, which Red should go and retrieve. Well, the next day, Andy's cell is found empty. And Red, distraught at the loss of his friend, goes and sits in his cell. And he chucks a stone against a picture of Rackle Welsh, which is on the wall of his cell. The stone goes through the poster, and you'll remember the scene if you've seen it. It tears the poster, and it reveals a tunnel which he's been tunnelling with the little rock hammer for about 20 years. Andy has made his escape through the prison sewers. He then exposes the prison governor as a fraud who commits suicide, but not before Andy has emptied his bank account of all the laundered money. Andy then makes his way to the oak tree in Maine, where he buries the cache of money before fleeing to Mexico. A few years later, Red is then allowed parole and is released. He finds the oak tree, he digs up the money, crosses the border to Mexico, where he is reunited with his friend Andy. You'll have to see the film to get the true flavour of it. But the point is that Andy spent 20 years in prison acting shrewdly and acting dishonestly to earn his and Red's freedom. Tunnelling out of his cell, defrauding the prison governor out of his ill-gotten gains, preparing for Red's escape from parole. Everything that Andy does is dishonest. But he's the hero of the film. We love him, don't we? For his shrewdness, his cleverness, and the way that he lives for his dream of the future. Because his dream of the future is him and Red being reunited in Mexico. And that dream absolutely dominates his life in prison for 20 years. Now, in the story that we've just read, Jesus is telling a story of another person who acts dishonestly. But he's the hero of the story, because his life is also dominated by a dream of the future. And the point of this story is, the way to live as a Christian is to be dominated by a dream of the future. Now, I don't know what your dream of the future is. You might like just to give that a little bit of a thought. What do you dream for in terms of the future? I suspect most of our dreams of the future are limited to this life only. You know, providing for our families, providing for our pension maybe, paying off the mortgage, paying for our children's education or for their future or something. Most of our dreams of the future are very much limited to this life. But what Jesus says here is that if we're going to live as Christians, we need a bigger dream. So my first point is a dream of the future. If you look at number one, verse one, you'll see that a rich man's manager is accused of being incompetent. His boss calls him in, he examines his books, and he finds that the charges are true, and he sacks him on the spot. In verse 3, the manager says to himself, "What am I going to do now? I'm too old to become a manual labourer, and I'm certainly too proud to beg." But he has a dream of the future. He says, "I know what I'll do. While I'm serving my notice, I'm going to befriend all my master's debtors so that they will repay me with employment when my job ends." So he visits each in turn, and he systematically reduces their bills. So he calls the first one in and he says, "How much do you owe?" 3,000 litres of olive oil. That's worth 3 years' wages. Oh, he says, "Don't worry, make it 1,500. Then he asks the second, "How much do you owe?" In verse 7. 30 tons of wheat. He says, "Oh, don't worry about that. Make it 24 instead." Reducing the amount by 20%. Now, we never hear if his dream comes true. We don't know whether the debtors whose bills he reduced give him employment after he leaves his master's employment. All Jesus tells us here is his master's reaction. And what a surprise. You would have thought that the master would have been furious at his dishonesty for defrauding him out of so much of what he is owed. But not at all. Look at verse 8. The master commended the dishonest manager because he had acted shrewdly. Now, not surprisingly, this story has troubled people over the years. They've said, why does Jesus tell a story which commends dishonesty? But actually, if you look at it, it's not the manager's dishonesty which the master praises, but his shrewdness. You see that word? He's shrewd. And he's shrewd, or he uses his ingenuity, in preparing for the future, in living for his dream. So Jesus comments on the parable in verse 8. For the people of this world, that's people who are not believers, are more shrewd in dealing with their own kind than are the people of the light, that's his disciples. I tell you, use worldly wealth to gain friends for yourselves, so that when it is gone, you will be welcomed into the eternal dwellings. And it's this that I want to concentrate on today. How can Jesus possibly use an incompetent and dishonest manager as a good example? Well, this is to miss the point. Jesus does not comment on the man's dishonesty. What he commends is his shrewdness in preparing for the future. Just like Andy in The Shawshank Redemption, spending 20 years shrewdly using his resources, his banking skills, his little rock hammer, his friendship with Red, to prepare for the future and freedom. So the dishonest manager uses all of his resources to provide for the future, making friends with his master's debtors, so that when he's sacked, he will have a job to go to. So what is the dream that we are living for? To go back to my original question, what's the dream that you're living for? Well, Jesus says here that we should prepare for our future beyond the grave as much as the manager prepared for his future. Verse 9, look at it again. I tell you, use worldly wealth to gain friends for yourselves, so that when it's gone, you'll be welcomed into the eternal dwellings. That's the dream that Jesus says we should be living for. Now, I wonder if you know what was the most expensive birthday party and how much it cost. Most expensive birthday party ever? Anyone got any idea? Whose birthday party was it?
Elton John.
Good guess. Not Elton John.
Russian oligarch?
Sorry?
A Russian oligarch?
Could have been a Russian oligarch. It wasn't, actually.
Philip Green.
Not Philip Green. No. Queen. Yes, though. Yeah. It was actually the Sultan of Brunei. The Sultan of Brunei turned 50 in 1996, and he had a birthday party that cost $27.2 million.
What?
I have to say $16 million of that was blown on having Michael Jackson as the as the star of the party. And I've no doubt that the Sultan made many friends from that party, don't you think? You've been invited to that party, don't you think you'd have been quite well disposed towards him? But those friendships would not have been eternal friendships, would they? You know, if you were invited to that party, that would have been a friendship which would have only lasted for this life. Jesus here is talking about using our resources so that we make friends with people. Not so that they will just be our friends now, but they'll be our friends for eternity. Now that's an interesting thought, isn't it? I wonder if you've ever thought of your friendships in those terms. Do you make friends with people just for this life? Or do you make friends with people for eternity? Because Jesus is talking here about using our resources to make friends with people so that they will welcome us into heaven. Now that's an extraordinary thought, isn't it? But it is actually a dream that should dominate our lives if we're Christians. If we use what we have to serve other people, however much we have or however little we have, we can make a profound effect on other people's lives. That's what Jesus is saying. So much so that they'll be cheering us on when we enter heaven. Now, just think for a moment. I don't know many of you very well, and I don't know whether you're Christians or not, but I suspect quite a few of you are. If you are a Christian today, just think back. Was there somebody who helped you to understand about Christianity? That there was somebody, you can think, yeah, that person was a real influence on me. He or she, they befriended me. Perhaps they taught in your Sunday school class. Perhaps it was a teacher at school, or maybe somebody in your church who was kind and befriended you and put themselves out to talk to you about Jesus Christ. I told you that I became a Christian in my Christian union at school back in the 70s. The person who helped me most was an elderly man. He was in his 80s, and he had spent his life as an evangelist to schools. And he visited our school. He was in it. He was in his 80s. He befriended me. He wrote me letters. He visited me a number of times. And I became a Christian because of him. Now, when he got to his heavenly dwelling, he was cheered on by hundreds of people who'd become Christians as teenagers through his influence. But you don't have to be an evangelist to live for this dream of the future. All we have to do is to be prepared to use our resources to befriend other people and be concerned about their spiritual lives. And that's something that any of us can do, can't we? So I think of people in my church who volunteer for an organisation called BEASM. Have you heard of the BEASM? It's a wonderful organisation. It's an international organisation now. What they do is they take high quality goods that people don't want, and they pass them on to people who are in need. So not rubbish, but really high quality stuff, which they then redistribute. But they're also concerned for people's spiritual needs as well. And we have some people in our church who volunteer for that. Befriending people who are in real need. Others have people round to their homes for coffee or lunch or supper, just to befriend them and introduce them to other Christians. Many people give generously to various mission projects in our church, in this country and around the world. And still others use their time and their money to serve people on summer camps and programs. And other people help to run courses and groups for people who are not yet Christians. You see, all these people, they're just doing what they can to make friends with other people so that they are a spiritual help to them. Now, other people may say that we're wasting our time and our money by ploughing so much of our resources into Christian activity. But we know better. We know that we're living the dream. The dream of knowing that we have an eternal dwelling where we're going to, and we want to take as many people as we possibly can there with us. By investing in God's kingdom, we're acting shrewdly, like the dishonest manager, like Andy in Shawshank Jail. We are using our resources now to make wise provision for the future, so that we are welcomed into the heavenly dwelling. Now, I wonder if you realise that Jesus did just the same. There's a verse in the Bible that says that Jesus endured the cross for the joy set before him. I don't know if you've ever come across that verse before. It's in the letter to the Hebrews. For the joy set before him, Jesus endured the cross. Now, I've often thought, what was the joy set before him? So what was the joy that Jesus didn't have before the cross, which he had after he had died on the cross? What was the joy set before him that enabled him to endure that terrible suffering? And the answer is us. Us. That was the joy set before him. Him having us as his friends for eternity. That was the joy. That was what enabled him to endure that terrible suffering of the cross, so that he could be, so that we could be forgiven and welcomed into his heaven. Now, here, Jesus is calling us to do the same. He is calling us to pour out our resources, which we can't take into eternity, by the way. There are no pockets and a shroud. You can't take any of it with you. He's calling us to use our resources here on earth for the eternal future. And that is a really shrewd thing to do, to think about how we can use our resources so that we have a positive spiritual influence on other people. And as I say, it could be as simple as inviting a friend round for a cup of coffee or taking them out for a drink in the pub. I wonder if any of you have heard of Count Nicholas von Zinzendorf. Anybody heard of Count Nicholas von Zinzendorf? Von Zinzendorf was the founder of the Moravian Church, which is, I think it still exists on the continent. There aren't very many Moravian churches in this country anymore. Anyway, he was a very powerful and wealthy German aristocrat who lived in the 18th century. And he poured himself out, in the way that I've been talking about, in the service of his lord and others. And he died with virtually nothing, having given it all away. And it all began when he was a 19-year-old, finishing his education on the grand tour of various galleries and architectural glories in Europe. You know the way people, wealthy people did that in those days. Well, he was in the Dusseldorf Gallery of Art, and he came across a painting by the Italian master Domenico Fetti. And this picture is a picture of Jesus wearing a crown of thorns entitled Ecce Homo, Behold the Man. And it's a picture of Jesus before Pontius Pilate, a picture of abject suffering. And below the picture, the artist had written, All this I have done for thee. What hast thou done for me? All this I have done for thee. What hast thou done for thee, done for me? There and then, said Zinzendorf, I asked Jesus Christ to draw me into the fellowship of his suffering and open up a life of service. And that's precisely what he did. Zinzendorf used up all his resources so that others may know Christ and that he might be welcomed into the heavenly dwellings with them. And what a welcome he must have received when he died in 1760. So can I go back to my original question? What is the dream that you are living for? And don't tell me you haven't got a dream, because we've all got a dream. We're all living for something. Maybe your dream is of a better job, a bigger house, a smaller mortgage, a healthier bank balance, a more secure pension, a comfortable retirement, a happy family. And all of those are, you know, reasonable dreams, but they're hardly a dream to live for. Lift up your eyes. Expand your horizon. Dream bigger dreams of all the people around you that you could invest in. Is there somebody that you could befriend? Somebody who you could help? Somebody who you could get to know a little bit better, so that you could introduce them to relationship with the Lord Jesus Christ? That's how we'll be welcomed into the heavenly dwelling place, and that is how to live as a Christian. Now, it may be that there's somebody here who says, well, look, that's all very well, but I'm not sure that I am a Christian, really. You know, you're talking about living for the future, but, you know, I don't know what you're talking about, really. I've got a little booklet here called Me, a Christian. That would be a good little booklet for you if you're really not at all sure of where you stand spiritually. All you have to do is ask me for it, and I'll just pass it to you very quietly so nobody else will see if you want to ask me at the end. Thank you very much for listening to me, and I wish you all the best with your revived men's breakfast.
Thank you very much indeed. As you're saying, this is one of the first of our revived breakfasts. Do keep an eye out. You will see further notifications about further breakfasts. And also we're thinking about starting a little sort of men's group, a little sort of men's fellowship, where we have some time together to pray, to study the Bible together. Again, if you're interested in that, have a speak to myself or Jonathan or Will over there. I would very much like you to be part of a small group that perhaps meets in somebody's house to talk about these things. And sometimes we've never talked about these things before. Come along to this little group. We're trying to put this on, and we can have that good time together, okay? So you'll see something about that further on in the year, and you'll see further notifications about breakfast, okay? We just say a huge big thank you to Richard for coming for us today. It's been thought-provoking, and again, if you do want to speak to Richard afterwards, I'm sure you're probably not rushing away straight away. Okay, you probably need to go by lunchtime. Thank you very much indeed. Do enjoy the rest of your day, and thank you for coming to our breakfast.